Hey, good evening, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Hate that when that happens. Good evening, and welcome to Let's Talk CFL. I'm late. I'm Christopher. I'm sorry. We'll see what happens, and we can see if we can get some people happening here and get this show on the road, because I absolutely apologize for being late, and I don't know what happened. Okay, Kelly, you're live.
Hey, man, what's up?
Hey, I am sorry, man. I was outside. I had a stuck truck, and I was working away and missed the time zone here, everything else. Who else is around? Is Charles around?
Yeah, everybody's down except Lance. I think Mike and Charles are around. I'll just shout at them that I'm on.
Mike has to call in. I put up the phone number into the chat for Mike call in. Okay. Okay, just a sec. I think we should have Charles in now.
I'm here now.
Okay. I'm freaking out. Where's Mike? Okay, so sorry, let's get this thing rock and rolling here. I've got that up. I just need the CFL.ca. Okay, you got an itinerary there, Kelly?
Yeah, I can
modify
pull it up
one for being 38 minutes late.
Yep, no worries. Well, we can just kind of rush through the games that have happened already a little bit.
Well,
spend more time on ours. Yeah, exactly.
What am I looking here for? Let's talk. Did you put the agenda up in the show group?
I did.
Okay.
First hour to rehash the week. And then the two that you had suggested. The Montreal and Toronto coming out and stating that Crompton and Ray's jobs are not safe.
Okay, never mind. We'll continue this. Okay.
Yep.
We got Charles. We got Kelly. We haven't seen Mike. Just a sec. You know what I can do? I can give Mike a call on my cell, or I can Skype him in. Has he been around?
Yeah, he was saying just give him a shout.
Okay.
But, I mean, not for you to call him, but for me to tell him when you were around.
Well, we did that. He's not listening. Well, is Lance just saw this. Is he...
Yeah, Lance is unavailable because he got called in.
Hello?
Mike?
Yo, Mike.
Townsend?
Yeah, it's me.
Okay, buddy, you're in. I Skyped you in.
Oh?
We're waiting for you to call the show, but you didn't look at Never mind.
Oh, okay, yeah, I heard it beep, but I wouldn't pay no attention. I'm riding. How y'all doing tonight?
We're doing wonderful. Great. I'm sorry I'm late. I had a truck stuck out in the front yard, and I had to unstuck it, and I lost track of time. And I looked down, and my phone kept beeping, right? And I'm going, what the hell's going on? So many things are happening, right? So I thought I'd look at it to find out what kind of disaster it was. And I'm going, oh, I'm 38 minutes late for the show. So here I am. And sorry for being late, guys. What's that?
Is the truck on still?
Yeah, everything's fine. Yeah, everything's fine. I'm soaking wet. My pants are wet and everything else, but that's okay. I'll just kind of sit through this for a bit when you guys get talking. I'll mute my mic and go put some shorts on. Yeah. I was just waiting for the popcorn out here to stop because that's kind of loud.
So
okay.
We're live right now?
We are live. We are on the air. And anybody, if we have any listeners, we're late. And it's 100% my fault. So let's jump into the agenda. The first hour, we're going to rehash the week three actions from Thursday to Friday. We got three games. One of them is not being played till tomorrow night. And we'll just see how that goes. So where are we on our first? Our first game of this week?
Yeah. Go to that Thursday night, or what was it, Montreal?
No. It was Thursday night. It was Ottawa in Edmonton. The final score was 46-17 for the Edmonton Eskimos. They destroyed the Red Blacks, and it just did not look good for Henry Burris that night.
Not at all.
So
it was a disaster.
Yeah, it didn't look good for anybody.
Back down to earth.
Yeah, reality, exactly. Reality set in.
Yeah.
I mean, Burris was 20 for 36, 162 yards and one interception, no touchdowns. I mean, how is that a quarterback?
They could have been calling for the backup there in Ottawa. That's for sure. He just had an off night. And it's unfortunate when it comes against a team that's kind of got things going for them, and that's how I would have described the Eskimos' performance, is they were rolling. Matt Nichols
Ottawa played all three.
Blunts.
Yeah, Ottawa played all three quarterbacks, O'Brien and Thomas DeMarco. DeMarco is 0-2 with an interception. I mean, 0-2
right.
And one interception? What have you done here? What's the QB efficiency rating? Can you have a negative one? Because that's a negative. That's a negative efficiency rating, right? And then O'Brien came in, and he was 6 for 11 for 34 yards, and their total rushing was less than 30.
They got to get off the bottom.
They got to get that young guy advancing his, efficiency with the offense and in his development within the CFL game, because he did look good in preseason. What is it, Franklin that's there? The young American?
Are we talking Edmonton or Ottawa?
Edmonton.
Franklin, he came into the game late as well.
Did he?
Yes.
I don't know. Yeah, I guess we were talking about Ottawa needing a guy, not Edmonton. But, Ottawa definitely struggled at the quarterback position on the whole.
Mm-hmm. It is just, No, they was all around, not just on running the ball, they were bad. They were terrible on defense. It was an all-around poor performance by Ottawa. Looked like a lot of, leftover from last year. They weren't sharp in any facet of the game.
Well, the only saving grace for Ottawa here was they weren't at home.
Yes.
If they stunk it up this bad in Ottawa, that would have been bad.
Yeah. That would have been a real wind out of the fans' sails after such a strong start. And to get crushed like they did, that would have been a real wind out of their fans' sails.
Well,
yeah.
Hopefully this is a hiccup, okay? And they rebound next week. But we won't know until next week. But for all intents and purposes, Ottawa sucked on this one. Mike, are you still here to teach you?
Yeah, I'm still here, man. And my window's down right now, so I had to hit the new button.
No,
I wouldn't disturb y'all.
That's fine. I just want to make sure that you're able to get your 2 cents in worth here.
Go ahead, man. I'm gonna let this window get rolled up, and then I'll make my quick take real quick on what I thought about the game.
Okay.
My window drove down.
No, that's cool. That's cool. Matt Nichols. Everybody said he was good at Cav. You know, as he came in for a reliever in the last 2 years, he really didn't amount to much. But he sure took control of this game.
He did, definitely. It was a welcome change for Eskimo fans, I think. Matt has, you know, performed admirably in camps. He's even kind of, you know, blown that label on his side that says camp quarterback. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he performed admirably in this game, and it's a welcome change for sure. I've always been a Matt Nichols supporter. I'd like to see him do well for himself in this league. He's a likable guy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. This was a performance Matt Nichols needed because there were a lot of question marks around him, a lot of people saying he couldn't get the job done. He really needed to come out and give a good performance. Had he come out and laid an egg, that would have intensified the pressure on him, and you would have seen a lot more calling for Franklin to get the next start, but he was able to come in, and he did a good, very good job. There's no question about it.
Yeah. For sure, for sure. So was there anything interesting, anything wonderful that happened in this game that you're looking for? The one thing that stands out in looking at the stats for me is that it's Grant Shaw, isn't it? Grant Shaw went 4 for 6 for extra points. He missed two.
Yeah. He missed two.
Yeah, another two, let's say, because he's missed a couple before this game.
Yep.
I think he's behind the league, maybe.
Yeah, well, we're seeing it more and more. We're seeing these converts get missed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Part of the evolution of the game when the rule comes into effect this year, we're not used to seeing it or whatever, and so it is a bit shocking at first, but in the grand scheme of things, I think it'll all even out and kind of become a bit more normal, you know, as time goes. Right.
Yeah. I know we can deal with this at another time, but let's kind of look at this in a little different light right now. The point after, since we brought up the subject, let's deal with it a little bit. There's been 2, 3, 6, 9. There's been 9 missed point afters this year.
Yep.
Yeah, 9 in 3 weeks. There hasn't been that many in the last 10 years.
No, there has, but I think that would only eclipse last year's totals by about 2 or something. I bet there were 6 or 7 missed last year.
I thought there was only 3.
Maybe all year, but still, even if it were all year, we're talking 3 weeks.
Yeah, I know. It's superb. I like it. I mean, it adds a new dimension to the game. It's a different game than it was last year. It really, really is. Like, the mathematics are different now. You have to, you cannot bank on that extra point. And beforehand, you could just bank on it, you know, pretty much. And you could game plan, you know, knowing that you had those points. But now it's just, there's errors.
And
go ahead.
Go ahead, Mike.
Oh, no, sorry. I was going to say, and also with them moving the ball back a little bit, it's making these kickers earn their money.
Well, certainly. Kelly, they missed 2 last year. All of last year.
of last year. Wow. Holy.
All of last year, there were 2 that missed. The guy from Winnipeg with that Hallelujah name.
Ira Lahu.
Yeah, actually Winnipeg missed them both. They had another kicker named Jones, and he's the one that missed the other one. So Winnipeg's the only team that missed a point after last year. So we've got 9 this year and 2 all of last year.
That's amazing. We're 3 weeks in at what you guys are saying. We're looking at about 70 missed conversions this year.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, that's
you,
what
it's... You extrapolate it out. Yeah.
It's having a difference.
Yeah.
A big
difference. For sure. I mean, and scoring is up. Imagine that, fellas. You know what I mean? We did hear the numbers this week, and it's slightly up in that 10% range kind of thing, but scoring is up at this point of the year.
Yeah,
yep.
I sent a message off to CFL, and I said that they're going to have to put a new column in for 2-point conversions for quarterback attempts and misses, or attempts and completions, and for receivers and or runners who have done this, so that we can at least track this, right? Because right now, I mean, this is now an important part of the game. It's a huge part of the game now. And we've got no stats that we can follow. So I put a note out to the CFL, and they haven't responded yet, but it is the weekend.
Yeah, you know all the positions and all the cities of the CFL are tracking the stats. And, I think that's a good point, is we need to include some of these new stats. And stats is what we look for as sports fans, right? That's what we that's our gift.
Yep.
Well, it's what I pay attention to. Not necessarily personal stats, but team stats.
Mm-hmm.
Two. Percentages are very telling.
Yeah.
That one's not looking too good at 0% right now.
No. And Thomas DeMarco with a negative efficiency rating. That was funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That game was really bad, man. That was an embarrassing game. But King came out, man, blazing. The defense was on. The offense was clicking. I mean, man, they were running on all cylinders. And you know, I can't really bash Ottawa too bad, because it's the, you know, if you look at it, they 2-1, so they still got a good record. They just had a bad outing. Now next week is going to retail. What type of auto team that's going to go through the season. Now, he better peak their offense. Yeah, Moss better peak their offense, man, and come up with some nice plays, man, to get that ball moving. It's not just going to be a long night for Iowa fans and myself sitting down there watching that game.
Yeah. Okay, so I found the QB efficiency ratings, and Thomas DeMarco for Ottawa, who is 0 completions on 2 attempts and 1 interception, is -206.3.
Wow.
That's
Mike, I thought of a strategy for, like, I'm no fashion diva or anything, but I thought of a wardrobe strategy for you on your trip. You can wear a T-shirt over top of your Chad Johnson jersey, and if Montreal wins, you can just take it off and strut around there.
Charles.
Oh, man.
Charles, what
is
the other thing there, buddy?
What was that?
Were you trying to get in there?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. I was going to say that that's got to be some kind of a record for futility. -200? What do you think, 226?
Yeah. 206. Drew Tate has a negative efficiency rating as well. He's -54.9.
Yeah. That looks great compared to Thomas DeMarco. Good grief. You barely get minuses, period. 206? Yeah, that's one game that they're just going to want to forget altogether and throw that tape and burn it in the fireplace, because that was just dreadful.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they'll show up next week, I don't doubt. They're a team now, and I think the first 2 weeks kind of proved that, they have the ability to perform as a unit. One thing that the Riders haven't done really gets my goat is they haven't put 4 quarters on the field. They haven't played well in all 3 facets of the game. And I have seen Ottawa put 4 quarters together, and I have seen them
play in all three facets, play well in all three facets of the game, the special teams, the offense, and the defense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I know they can do it. It's just a matter of which brand of Ottawa Red Blacks will we see next week. And, Mike, you're going to first game.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
That's exciting.
First game in Ottawa.
Exciting.
Oh, yeah, it's very exciting. And the thing about it is, I got me some very good seats. I'm sitting down there in the field seats, down on the, near the field. So,
oh, nice.
I hope y'all might see me on TV, man. Yeah. I'm making me a poster board that's going to say, from Detroit to Ottawa, first CFL game.
Well, there you go. Cool.
And I'm going to wave it over my head for a while. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Cool.
Someone call Cusper.
man, and you know what, guys? I'm going to tell you real quick, all of Ottawa, all of our nation, people in the Ottawa Facebook group, man, they've been welcoming with open arms, man. I mean, I've been really buzzing yesterday in the Ottawa group.
Cool. Good.
I plan on meeting a lot of people.
Good stuff. So it's a repeat of today, of this week's game, eh? It's Edmonton and Ottawa now. It's a back-to-back. So they definitely have something to prove.
Yeah,
always good.
Yeah. Okay, are we done with this game? Do you want to move on?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, Friday night we had a doubleheader. We had the Montreal Alouettes into Winnipeg Blue Bomber territory and followed up by Saskatchewan and BC. I actually had the pleasure of going to the BC game, unlike many in this group. Sorry, Charles.
I had an interesting night there.
Yeah.
Go on.
I missed the Montreal-Winnipeg game completely because that's the two-hour transit for me to get downtown, so I did not get the opportunity to watch this game, although I did think that Montreal was going to win it, and they never looked good from the beginning. They were playing catch-up all game from what I was playing, getting off of the smartphone. So final score was 25-23 for Winnipeg. Somebody take it away. Somebody who watched it.
Oh, I watched it, and it was actually thanks to a good friend of ours, all of ours, Steven. You know who he is. He knows who he is. I don't have to say his last name. But yeah, I watched it on the TSN Go app, and it was fantastic. A great contest, kind of back and forth for a little while. Drew Willey looked good. He, we had all questioned whether or not he was going to be, healthy enough after 6 days on the protocol. He turned out pretty good, guys, and Montreal, they did just enough to lose this game. they really, similar to Saskatchewan's game, they really, for lack of a better term, pissed it away. Like, they had a good thing going, and every time they would take a big penalty or have some sort of setback and kept shooting themselves in the foot. And, that's the way this game went. It was down to the wire, though. It was another great showcase for the CFL on ESPN in the States. I know a lot of people were watching because these are two teams that, there's pretty good reason for both teams to be adored down south. And, so it was a very good game, a nice warm-up for the late game. And the broadcast was fantastic. I had a lot of fun watching it, and it brought us to a discussion within the group about the TSN Go app and its accessibility across Canada and what's wrong with it and what can we maybe do to improve it. But we'll talk about that later or another show perhaps.
Yeah. Just looking at the stats for me.
Yeah.
Well, looking at the stats, they tell a story to me, although they don't tell the same story that the scoreboard does. Cato was 22 for 31, 317 yards. That's a respectable game. except for zero TDs and two interceptions.
Yeah.
Times shooting themselves in the foot.
And one interception that got returned to the end zone.
S.J. Green, six catches, 180 yards. He averaged 33 yards a catch. Okay? That's amazing.
That is.
Fred Stamps was 3 for 33, but he had some dropsies in that game from what I saw on the highlights.
Yeah, he did, and I picked Cato to have a good week, a bounce back sophomore week.
It did.
Yeah,
it just didn't happen.
That game was a good game on ESPN, man. I mean, it went down to the wire. It was a good game back and forth. And Cato played well. And we've seen vintage S.J. Green at his best. I mean, that's what he does. So, you know, there's no surprise there that they went to him six times. But, like you said, Chris, Fred Stamps has some costly drops. Costly.
Yeah.
And you can't have too many costly drops in the CFL, man, because you already know. You go through the next week dropping the ball like that, two things are going to happen. You're either going to get bitched or you're going to get the pink slip.
Yeah, and like right before half, if you remember, Mike, Winnipeg was, had Montreal pinned back in their own end, probably inside the 30, and Montreal had Winnipeg sent the house. Mike O'Shea came up with one of his vintage stunts inside and got a guy free running straight for the punter, and they blocked the kick, and a young guy picked it up in the end zone, and there's 7 points on the board right before half. Like, that was very demoralizing for Montreal, but it had the potential to be, but I didn't really see Montreal give up in the second half exactly, and that's what was most encouraging, I guess, about Montreal's performance.
They didn't give up.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to look at the stats here for Winnipeg, and it's really confusing for me because there was no receiving touchdowns and there was no rushing touchdowns, yet they scored 25 points. So that means that the kicker in field goals was 4 for 4, so that means there was 12 points scored by field goals. There was no single points. So that means there's 13 points were scored by either the defense or by special teams. And the offense for Winnipeg did nothing.
Well, you're right there. I mean, they had a block punt for a touchdown and an interception for a touchdown. And there was a key touchdown there, and the offense just produced field goals the rest of the way.
The leading rusher for Winnipeg in the game was Drew Willey.
Yeah.
And that was a total of 28 yards.
Nobody did anything.
This was a pathetic performance by Winnipeg, and they got a win.
Yep.
They got a W out of this, and they didn't deserve it.
Sometimes you got to give credit to those teams that can hang around when they are playing ugly, though, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, they did a marvelous job of just farting along in that game, right? I mean,
literally. I mean, wow. You know, they always say that defense wins championships and offense defines by how many points.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, okay. Well, this offense said they won by 2 points and the offense didn't score one of them.
I know. Great.
Yeah. You don't see that very often. Especially in the CFL.
I did not understand this until I started looking at the stats, and there was a missed extra point in this game.
If you look back at Montreal's stats, they've been very good in the red zone. They don't give up many 7-point, 6-point opportunities in that red zone area on defense, and
that's been their strength is a bend, don't break type defense that they've received so far this year. That's been their saving grace, really, kept them in games.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah. But if that offense doesn't get better, they're gonna struggle here very quickly.
Yeah, they got some tough games coming up on this.
Yeah. They're gonna have to put the ball in the end zone some more.
Both Montreal and Winnipeg are going to have to.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, the Montreal's in the bottom of the East right now at 1-2. Hamilton's 1-1. Toronto's still 2-0. Ottawa's at 2-1.
It's a crazy year.
I don't know.
So
it's a crazy year. And, you know, if you remember last week, we were getting so much abuse about how dominant the East was. And I said, you know, that can all change in 1 week. And it did.
Yeah, sure enough.
Yeah,
it changed in 1 week.
Ottawa goes down,
so
Montreal goes down.
And tomorrow there's a good chance Toronto could.
It's very possible.
Stamps of the class.
Yeah. So, okay, so Mike, you have any input here on your Montreal Alouettes?
They'll be fine. They'll be okay.
They'll be fine?
Mm-hmm.
This season or next?
Yeah, they'll be fine this season. they're going to get the offense together, peek and tune a little bit, you know, look at game film, see what went wrong. I mean, it wasn't a bad game. They just fell short. And I'm glad they didn't give up. But like I said, they'll be fine, man. I'm looking for Keem Kato to bounce back next week with a win.
They got beat by a team who didn't score a touchdown.
Yeah, they really did. But you know what? We know Montreal can score, and the defense is still stellar. So it was just a bad outing, you know, bad outing. And Higgins and the boys are going to bounce back. There's nothing to hold their heads down about because they played a hell of a game. And they didn't give up like most teams probably would give up, man. You know, going into halftime, team scores on you, man, you know, right before halftime with a block punt and sees up your score. I mean, that's demoralizing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of the teams that don't give up, I think that's the next game on tap here. Second game of the doubleheader, Friday night football doubleheader, saw Saskatchewan Roughriders come into the Dome in BC Place and play the Lions, and damn, was that a good game to watch. Regardless of what the outcome was, and I honestly mean that, if it went the other way, it still would have been a very exciting game. But I'm glad it ended up the way it did. So what we had was for the second time in 2 weeks, Saskatchewan Roughriders went into overtime, and both times they were not successful at completing it. They were up by 11 points with 2 minutes left in the game. BC got a touchdown, two-point conversion, and a 56-yard field goal from Richie Leon, which was a team record, to tie the game, to bring it to overtime. Saskatchewan did not do well in overtime. They settled for a field goal, and BC responded with a touchdown to Manny Arsenault for 6 points. That was the summary, as best we could. I'm going to give it back to the green. Kelly, go ahead.
It was definitely a well-played game by the Riders, you know, for all intents and purposes. They have an issue this year, and it seems to be finishing out, closing out ball games, making those critical plays to the stretch, and those critical coaching decisions as far as clock management and the correct percentage calls as far as scoring are concerned with, 15 minutes left to go in the ballgame. The thing that I was most encouraged about was another stellar Kevin Glenn performance. People shooting down and, do what they do to people who, suffer a lot and with these types of losses and whatnot, close games. But I don't buy into any of that stuff. And one thing is, hats off to BC. They played a very good football game because, like I said, Saskatchewan was full value for the victory for BC. They made some critical plays. That Austin Colley made a play, and I wanted to wring his neck. by the way, I also watched this one on my smartphone, and I was just happy to do it. Not a big deal. It was like, people say, "Oh, I can't see it." Well, you're blind then, because I can.
I am.
Yeah.
I could not watch a game on my phone.
I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you something. I don't know what type of smartphone you guys got, but what you can do if you have any TVs, flat screen TVs, you get the adapter to hook to your phone, and you can plug your phone into your TV and watch it on your TV. That's what I do.
Yeah, I have a cord like that I never use, mind you, but that's one of the key things you can do. But it's the game on Friday night was kind of a nerve-wracking one for me, being I was up for a family wedding, so I was camping on the weekend. So if you've ever been camping, especially at nighttime, getting any kind of radio reception is very, very difficult when you're up in the woods area there. So it comes in and out. So in the fourth quarter, the third down stop by the Lions defense, I didn't know initially whether or not it had actually stopped them, because right before they snapped the ball, my radio reception goes out. So I'm waiting. I'm like, come back, because it's all static. And then I hear the crowd cheering, and then they go into the long video review on that play. And during the video review, it went in and out three or four times. So it was it was an interesting way to experience that game, but a satisfying one with the final outcome.
That was the longest video review that I think I've experienced since they brought it in 4 years ago.
No kidding.
It went on and on.
I also think they got it wrong.
I don't think they got it wrong. He did not make the yards, and the fumble was after he. The review was bang on.
It was. It was perfect. There was nothing.
It was bang on. He did not make the yards, and he fumbled it after his forward motion had stopped. So it was not a fumble. It was a turnover on downs, and it was called correctly.
Right. It was. It was. I'll tell you that from the Saskatchewan bias perspective. It was 100% the correct call. The officiating crew actually did a really good job, I thought, this game. They let the right calls go, and they did call a couple of the stinker variety that people have been complaining about, like in the Ottawa-Edmonton game. That's the one thing that we failed to mention, was people were murdering the officials in that game for calling as many, these ones where they call it if you gesture for a flag. They called about six of those in the Ottawa-Edmonton game, guys.
well,
pretty crazy.
BC got called on that. Alex called. Austin Colley got called on that.
Yep, he did. And so, like I said, in our game, they made a couple of those calls. But overall, I thought they called a very even game, and the refs had no input in the outcome. And that's what we want, right? We just want them to be there and have no input on the outcome. Just call an even game.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody know what Kevin Glenn's stats were?
Yeah, I'm there right now. Kevin Glenn was 23 for 29, 271 yards, two touchdowns and an interception.
He's the leading passer in the football league.
Yeah. Yeah, he missed six incompletions. Travis Lule's numbers were 34 of 44. He missed, there were 10 that he incomplete for 404 yards, three touchdowns, yeah, and no interceptions.
Huge.
Huge numbers. Yes, that was Travis Lule's, one of his best games ever.
It was. It was a great game for him, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
And if he continues the way that he is, BC is back. And that was so exciting. And I don't want this to sound wrong. Yes, we were playing Saskatchewan, who is 0-3. And everybody points out that we were playing the worst team in the CFL and that we shouldn't get all excited about this. But I would say that Saskatchewan's defense is not the worst in the CFL.
No.
Not playing wonderful, but they're not the worst for sure.
Yeah, I think
agree.
You're right. Yeah, they proved that they're full value for maybe a seventh or eighth kind of ranking in the power rankings this week. Maybe back in that ninth spot again. But you're right. They're a good football team. They could very easily, with some, differences in coaching and some differences in outcomes. I know this is far-fetched, but it could be 2-1, could be 3-0, whatever. Whatever you want.
Richie Hall's kind of looking pretty good right now, isn't he?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And how about your guy, George Cortez?
George Cortez is looking brilliant.
Yeah, picked up his first win on Friday night this year, and I'm sure he is feeling sort of validated this weekend. Probably went out and did something fun the next day, I bet.
Yeah, I hope so. So I understand that, and I'm not following this on the writers' chats because most of them have banned me. I don't know why, but are they calling for Corey Chamblin's head as what I'm hearing?
Well, not necessarily, Chris. It's kind of some people are after what I'm after, where there's no sense for Greg Quick to be here if he's not doing anything. I mean, is he a positional coach? Is he the defensive coordinator? Who is Greg Quick and what the job does he hold on this football team? Because it seems to me like Corey Chamblin is coaching positions, he's coaching the defense as a whole, and he's coaching defensive backs. I mean, it's pretty confusing at this point on defense as far as the coaching dynamics, and that's one thing that I've highlighted that I'd like to see changed. But now, as you've suggested, people are saying Chamblin's decisions late in these games, and I alluded to it a little bit in my summary, some of these decisions have cost us here, and how many chances does a guy have? And raising questions more than, firing bullets. But and then, obviously, another target is going to be another new guy on the block, like you probably could have predicted. Jacques Chapdelain is getting a lot of criticism for having a guy, Anthony Allen, who is currently I think his average is 7.2 per carry or something like that. And because we didn't convert on that third down, we decided not to go for two more opportunities that we had in the game. And you've got a running back that leads the league with 7.2 yards per carry in Jerome Messam, actually, not Anthony Allen, pardon me. It's pretty crazy that Chamblin doesn't have that confidence in Chapdelaine's offense to get that yard. You got to go back to the well, is what we're saying. We
I think most Rider fans are of the mindset of, if you're going to gamble the once, what are you doing pulling the chute on the second and third opportunity? Like, either you go for it or you don't, right?
Yeah. Actually, Brandon Whitaker has got a better yards per average than Messam.
Okay,
but
well,
Messam is
semantic,
still 7.9 is amazing.
Yeah,
7.9
is amazing.
Whitaker's at 8.5, which is unheard of for the amount of touches that he's had.
I got a question.
But you know what, guys?
Go ahead, Chris.
No, that's Charles. Let Charles go here.
Oh.
He's got a question.
Oh, okay.
That is a question. If you were the Riders, in the last couple minutes there, on the third down, when they were short and they were going to third and one, do you think they would have been better off to punt it? Because you got to look at Richie Leon. He's got great leg strength, and he's shown it. The problem is they don't get it. They're already automatically basically in his range. I know the Lions took the penalty and had to go back into it, but would they have not been better off just punting the ball deep, because you only had at that point about a minute left. So rather than just gamble, kick the ball deep, make them, when you already have limited time, make them come up the field, because there wasn't very much time left. I understand you get the first down, you win the game, but at that point, earlier in the game, they were in close and got stopped and were forced to settle for a field goal, if I'm not mistaken. So
yeah, they were.
Knowing this, would they not have just been better off to punt the ball deep?
Yeah,
it's
like
coaching.
Yeah, it's one that we'll never know. But yeah, it's it does come down to those questions after the game. Is coach, do you think you would have been
coach
better off in the future? And you pointed one more out, Charles. It's definitely coming down to a lot of questions for Chamberlain. And you know what? If you want to know who put the accountability on Corey Chamberlain, it's Corey Chamberlain. Like he's going to have to answer for, you know, these types of questions. And he's got a. I don't know. I don't admire him right now.
No,
you know what, guys?
All, but,
and the thing about it is, you can't blame Kevin Glenn this time like they always try to blame Kevin Glenn for, because that's all I heard today. Get rid of Kevin Glenn. Glenn is playing good.
Yes.
So
Glenn
is
playing good enough to lose.
Yeah.
And he always plays good enough to lose. Okay? And I don't mean that in any bad way, because that's really what he does. He doesn't play good enough to win.
But get this, though, Chris. Right now, he's not exactly getting the best help. And, you know,
of course.
We do have one guy standing out per game. Last game, it was Dressler. The two before that, it was Ryan Smith, because Dressler was on the shelf. And, you know, we seem to have one guy that does it, but he does spread around the ball. He's just not very, I don't know, maybe the timing is off or whatever, and he's not hitting these guys in stride, but these guys got to take it to the house for him.
Yeah,
so,
but you got to finish. You can't lose the game, because they didn't, BC didn't really win this game. Saskatchewan lost it. I'm not taking anything away from the Lions, but the Riders had this one. And there's no reason why they shouldn't have won this. They blew it. And locked BC back in the game. And BC took every opportunity that was handed to them and ran with it and finally closed out in the red zone, which they just couldn't do for the last two games. Now, you go back to Chapdelaine, and if you remember from anything that I've said in this offseason coming up, he is a pass-first, pass-off offensive coordinator, and your running game, I don't care how good it is not going to be a main part of your offense. And if you need a running game, you got the wrong OC.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah, I do too, really, because you know, a lot of people are blaming that pick six on Chapdelaine, actually, the one that could have been Taj Smith's fault, the one that could have been Glenn's fault for telegraphing it a little bit out to the sidelines. But, you know, people are saying that's Chapdelaine's fault, actually. And I'm kind of with them. Like, it's, just a stupid call altogether. Where at that point in the game, I think there was, maybe 4 yards to go, and we were maybe at midfield or something like that, and we could have just punted the ball on the next down and been fine, but nope. You got to throw this long out to the, and you're up 10 points, by the way, sorry. You know what I mean? So,
yeah,
a lot of, he's throwing the ball when he should be running in late in games, and it is a part of the problem, Christopher. You're absolutely right.
He is going to throw the ball, and he's going to throw it all the time. And it doesn't matter whether you need ball security and you need to run out the clock and you need ball control and game control and whatever else, Chapdelaine is going to be throwing the ball. And there's a reason why we wanted him out of BC.
Yeah. There were so many times when he was here where he would call a play and I just would not understand it because it didn't make sense.
Like, we need
12 yards and you throw the 4 yard out. Well, what good is that going to do?
And Saskatchewan.
The worst thing is, the worst thing about Chapdelaine is me sitting in my living room. I know what play he's going to call, and if your defensive coordinator is worth a pinch of coon, there's no way that they don't know the same thing. You know what I mean? I know exactly what play he's going to call. In fact, I know women who know what play he's going to call. And I don't mean that. I do mean that in disrespect. I'm sorry. But, you know, there are people out there who just sit there and watch and say, well, we know what he's going to do. He's going to slant off to the left here. Boom, there it is. Boom, there it is. Boom, there it is. We can call every play from Chapdelaine. And so can every defensive coordinator out there.
Extremely predictable.
Yeah, he's had that tendency.
So, there's some serious issues in Ryderville this year. And honestly, the thing that's making you look the best right now is the fact that you've got Kevin Glenn in there and not Darian Durant.
Mm-hmm.
Because if Darian was in Chapdelaine's offense, it would be a total nightmare. Kevin Glenn at least could work with it.
Yeah, Darian would feel kind of conflicted as somebody who's ran other offenses is what you're getting at.
No, I'm saying that Darian Durant cannot pass the ball as often as he can. He needs his running game to hold up the defense. He needs the running game, the possibility of a run to freeze the defense. Right now, they pin their ears back and they're coming at the quarterback. And Darian can't handle that. And that's when he starts making mistakes, and that's when he starts pitching the ball to the other team. And that's when your TD to interception ratio goes back to 1-1. And that's where he was 5 years ago. And then Cortez came in and changed the offense for Durant, ran the ball, froze the defense, and allowed him the time to make a good pass. He didn't pass often. But when he did pass, he threw the ball with authority, and it was well done. But it wasn't often. In a Chapdelaine offense, it's going to be often. The defense is coming at you, and you better be quick on your feet, and Durant is not. And I don't mean quick on your feet as in running. I'm talking about thinking. Because he gets flustered
when you
throws the ball
when you get the linebackers. Especially when he got the linebackers breathing down his throat. I agree.
So, and you've got a nightmare happening right now in Ryderville.
Well, one thing that the Riders have kind of tended to do is leave Matt Rhea in the ball game, the rookie out of Michigan State, as that extra blocker for Kevin Glenn. And he'll pick up that strong side blitz and, that relieves a lot of pressure off an old guy. Having a young, thick kid to throw his helmet into somebody for you. And so I think that's been the saving grace so far. And I'm just, I'm
he's
not
a good
praying.
Offensive lineman, too.
Right. Yeah, I'm just hoping that we can keep it together as far as being competitive, because I think that would do for most right now in Saskatchewan.
Boy, a win. You got to get a win.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, it's about a win. But let's not forget good old 2011, guys. Take it away.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Kelly, I'll agree with you with a caveat. The 2015 Riders are not the quality of team that the 2011 BC Lions were.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll find out, that's for sure.
You don't have the quarterback. Travis Lule, without question right now, is the number one quarterback in the league. And we'll get better.
Yes.
Trevor Harris is doing an amazing job. Bo Levi Mitchell's not doing too bad. Drew Willey's doing a good job. But you wait and watch, because on a skill-based level, only Ricky Ray is better than Travis Lule. And Ricky's not playing right now.
Yeah, and he might not see field all year. I mean,
we don't really know
about Ricky. So
we're not hearing a lot about him, you know? We're not.
Oh, been pretty stiffed.
And why would we? With Trevor Harris playing the way that he does, why would you even rush Ricky Ray? Sit on the bench, buddy. You know?
There's no one to let him do it.
You know, that's going to be the back half of this show, and we're going to talk about the stability of their jobs. But, you know, I was at this game. I couldn't talk the next day. I was screaming. I was yelling. I was doing everything that I possibly could. It was exciting. It was thrilling. It was, I don't know. I don't know what to say. It was, you know what? I was completely surrounded. I have one seat this year, and I'm in section 215, which is right behind the Riders bench. And right about the 40-yard line, 42-yard line. And I'm in row 3, so we're like, there's only 2 people in front of me, and then we've got the Riders. And we were just having fun with Paul McCallum and just harassing the hell out of him and doing everything that we possibly could that was annoying. And we just completely surrounded. But I'm surrounded by green people. I was totally amazed. I mean, there were, in the section that I was at, there were more green uniforms than there were orange and black.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted,
awesome.
That's always the area that the visitors show up and play in, and that's where I am.
Right.
But there was a lot of green jerseys in this stadium, and it was a really small crowd. And
broadcast was great. I got to say, it was loud, and they showed everybody that was doing the right thing. Like, they showed a lot of good fans from BC, so it's good to see.
We do have some fabulous fans from BC, but there was only 23,000 people in the stadium. And I know sellout
that
right
really,
now. What's the sellout of the new of the lower bowl, Charles? Is it 27?
I believe it's about 27, yeah.
27.
I thought it was...
What's that?
Anyway, I thought it was 30 even.
No.
I don't think so. Something about 27,000 that comes to mind here. I will do some typing and see what I can find.
Yeah, it's reason why I'm saying 30 is because they did talk about that a little bit this off season with the changing of the configuration, moving everybody down from the upper bowl to the lower bowl if they had seats booked up there, and accommodating everybody's needs. BC was patted on the back for sure for accommodating everybody's needs, and looks like a great atmosphere. Like I say, the broadcast was fantastic.
I have no complaints. I mean, my seats were in the upper bowl. I had front row upper bowl at the 55-yard line. There is no better seat in the house. I loved it. I was really annoyed when they took that away from me, and I had to go into the lower bowl. But the atmosphere was spectacular. The game presentation, everything about the entire night was wonderful. I'm so stoked to be going back.
I'm just waiting for the next game so I can actually get there.
Well, I tell you guys what, I'm stoked for my trip this weekend coming up. And this is only one of many games that I will be going to this year. I'm also going to hit Toronto, Hamilton, and Saskatchewan, and then Winnipeg for the Grey Cup. So I'll be in your neck of the woods, Kelly, pretty soon.
Sweet. The tour.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be awesome. Tour of duty.
One of these days, you got to make it out west, Mike.
You know what? If I can get out west, I'm sure that would be out to the BC Lions game. I think that might be, DC, Calgary, Edmonton, and Winnipeg for a regular season game might be my agenda for next year.
There's actually an American fan on one of our things. I think it was Loud and Proud or whatever on Facebook. But
Let's Talk.
Oh, Let's Talk.
He's doing a 3 or 4 week.
No, it's not. It's 1 week. It's the 7th, 8th, 9th, and then the 13th. And he'll see 7 of the 9 teams, and just a great trip in Ottawa, Toronto, Hamilton, and Hamilton. Those are the 4 games.
Oh, wow. We hit 10 games.
Yep. It's going to be awesome. I mean, it's just such a sweet plan, like, the way I looked at it. The 7th, 8th, I think it's August, guys, coming right up.
Well, he's doing 7 games.
7 games.
Wow.
Oh, I read just in one weekend.
He's doing 3 or 4 games in 1 week. But his road trip is 2 to 3 weeks long.
Oh, wow.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what I say. Wow.
That's my understanding, and I could be completely wrong, but
another
he's from Alabama.
So,
Alabama.
Oh.
You can publicize
your... A guy named Ron Montgomery.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, shout out to the other American CFL fan besides myself.
Yep.
There are lots out there.
For sure.
Yep.
So, he's not, it's starting in August. August 3rd is his first game in Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
August 3rd, okay.
So
yeah, I'm gonna have to check out the August schedule for Hamilton and Toronto because I'll be back home at the end of the month, close to the end of the month for my daughter's birthday. So might have a birthday party for her and then shoot out to one of the games over the weekend.
Cool.
Oh yeah.
So we have a question kind of thing, and if people want to respond on Facebook or whatever. Go ahead in the Let's Talk CFL group or any number of the CFL groups that we keep track of. With Montreal and Toronto coming out and stating that Crompton and Ray's jobs are not safe, how is Darian Durant's job safe?
Gary Durant's job is safe because there is no viable replacement.
Nope.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the leading passer in the CFL has to be looked at as a viable replacement, I think. And that's the argument.
Would you honestly replace Gary Durant with Kevin Glenn?
Well, he is doing it now.
and that's just the question I'm asking people to ask themselves is, what's your call on this? And I'm not going to say what I would do because I think you guys know what I would do. I think you guys know what color or what number my jersey is. it's interesting. People here have always called for the backup quarterback, and I think it would be closer than you'd think, percentage-wise. Like,
I'm thinking 40% yes to Kevin Glenn right now. We're talking in the world right now. I mean,
it's not even a discussion right now, because there is no going back to Darien for this season, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, this is a question where we're going to discuss this next training camp, whether or not Tamman can bring in some hotshot quarterbacks out of the States to challenge Durant for his position if he's not ready to come back. But what we've got
right
now is we've got Ricky Ray that could be back in three games. Is his job safe?
Right.
Crompton, who's not even on the sixth game, could be ready next game. Is his job safe? And the answer to those questions is no. Neither one of those jobs is secure right now, because Cato is doing a decent job in Montreal, and Trevor Harris is doing an outstanding job in Toronto.
And you know what, guys? I'm gonna tell y'all this too. Also, Cato is doing a ripping up job in Montreal. But and this goes back to Kelly's thought about the quarterback position in Saskatchewan after for next year. If Montreal want to keep Cato, they better sign him to an extension. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Because you might find him in the green and white. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true, Mike. I mean, he does have, you know, he's been in touch with our player personnel people and agreed to come to camp with us shortly after attending camp with the Baltimore Ravens. He was tired and kind of worn down after the Ravens camp, so he elected not to show up to the Tampa camp with the Riders. And next thing you know, his lights are dealt to Montreal, and the rest is history. So
there you go. Yeah. Sure was.
It's not out of the realm of possibility there. I like your suggestion.
And really, guys, if you think about it, You got Bridge and you have Cato. One of them is going to be your future, so you're going to have to sign one of them to an extension, or you're going to lose one of them. You're going to lose one.
Well,
neither one
of them is an all-star starter right now. You could easily sign both of them to low-end starter salary, which is the $200,000-$250,000 range, and neither one of them would be an idiot not to take it.
Yeah, well,
you
there's only room for one number two guy. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, there's only one number two guy.
In Montreal, there is no number one guy, though.
Yeah,
I know, but who wants to be
number one?
That pile. Who wants to be number three out of that pile? I don't think Bridge wants to be a number three next year. I think he expects to do a number two.
Because I'm going to tell you guys, man, Lefevre's done, and I don't even see him coming back next year. I think Lefevre's done. Go ahead and give him his walking papers. Give him a little settlement, whatever you're going to do, and you know, pat him on his head and wish him well. But if you keep Bridge, Cato, and Crompton, next year will be a quarterback controversy. I don't care what they try to downplay or say it won't be. It'll be a quarterback controversy for sure.
I'll tell you what, Mike.
I think that's true.
They won't keep Crompton.
No.
Crompton is done with the
Alouettes.
But what you guys think? If Crompton comes in and plays good, if Cato struggles, then what?
I love Crompton. I love his style. I love.
Me too, man. I mean, he's not a bad quarterback. And like you said, it's Cato's job to lose. Bridge has already came in and showed that he's not ready to carry the team full time. That was shown within the first game when Crompton went out, and in the second game, that was already shown.
Yeah.
He needs work. Everybody know that. Cato comes in
exactly,
and he can lead the team. But now if Cato struggles and Crompton comes back in and plays good, you can't just get rid of Crompton like that, man. I mean, you have to really do some sit down, think about what you're going to do. Because if you get rid of him, that might be a mistake.
For sure. And the thing that really impressed me about Cato, guys, is just that, Mike. He stepped in, he played amazing football, like, from the second he was called upon. And that's what he's been able to do. And you can't take that away from the guy yet, because he's still on the run as far as I'm concerned. And it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks here for the Alouettes. See if they can bounce back and,
okay,
you know, get back to the winning ways.
Yes,
okay,
sir.
Cato would have been the anointed number one starter for the Montreal Alouettes if he did not have passport issues and showed up for day one of camp, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Montreal brought him in to be their number one quarterback, but he didn't make it. He didn't get into camp because of political issues, okay?
Right.
Crofton wouldn't have been even – Crofton may have been cut in camp. Cato came into camp and played the way that they thought he could, because they would be competent having Cato backed up by Bridge.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I think Cato's doing a wonderful job considering he did not have a training camp.
Yes, sir.
Right? And I think that, you know, even if he not fumbles the ball, but you know what I mean, as in has an off night or so, you have to cut him a little bit of slack because he is learning the game still. But he is playing amazing ball for considering he didn't have the same reps that every other quarterback in this league did.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. That's what I mean.
So they wanted
he's got
they wanted
high,
him
high.
As the number one, and they've got him.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're in that slot now, and that's what every team expects of their backups, and only lucky teams are rewarded with their backups, because really, you don't ever really get too many looks at the guy. You know, with the PA rules and stuff, the limited amount of practice time and time in training camp. It's, how about these people calling for 16-game season, 4-game preseason? Reduce injuries.
CFL used to do that. And they went to a 2-game with 18. Now, I'll tell you, why do we do that? Why is there only 20 games? Because they're saying that it's too hard on the players. Okay? I'm okay with that. Let's have four preseason games and an 18-game schedule, but the first two preseason games are all rookies.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
So we're not putting our veterans on the line in the first two games. They only get to come in on the last two games. So they still play a 2-game preseason with an 18-game schedule, but we have two mock-up games or scrimmage games, so to speak, to start with so that we can evaluate the raw talent better. So that we can actually honestly have some good preseason games where we're not playing third stringers. So that the number one guys can see something. Okay? So I think that going to a 4-18 schedule is not bad as long as the first two are non-veterans. I don't know. I'm throwing that out there.
Yeah, it doesn't sound bad.
No, I like that idea a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think
it could be your rookies and your second year players that don't get no PT.
Yeah, all young players.
Yep. Your rookies and your second year players.
And the thing is
just not your anointed starters.
Yeah.
Did you guys hear that Saskatchewan actually re-signed Keith Price?
What?
Well.
Yep.
Who?
Re-signed.
Keith Price.
Wow.
Is a...
Keith Price?
Yep. Yeah,
wow.
The hotshot quarterback that they had brought in last year that everybody was coveting, and he came in and he stunk it up.
He was a disaster.
Well, no, he didn't get any playing time, I don't think. But what he did do is practice with the team for, I think, as much as a couple weeks, and just went home at that point. I think he was given his release. But they've brought him in kind of as their fourth guy behind Sunseri, Glenn Durant, and now Keith Smith. Or, pardon me.
Keith Price.
Keith Price. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just looking at his Wikipedia page, and he has been signed by the Rough Riders, or at least it's been updated.
Mm. Yeah. So.
Well,
interesting. Back in the CFL spotlight, and that's kind of cool. I mean, I don't know. Keith Price is kind of an interesting prospect out of, Washington there. He played in the NFL with Seattle, and I think a little with Oakland as well. Just a crazy talent as far as his college years, and never really seen it translate in the pro game yet. But there's always that chance, and that's why you bring guys like this in.
Yeah, he is. He was signed by Seattle for the 2014 season. And then was
okay.
Released or something during that season. He never didn't play for Oakland or anybody else.
Yeah.
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 Mike, question for you. There was a hotshot quarterback came out of Seattle. He was on the Hamilton neg list, and BC just negotiated for it in a trade. Now he's on our negotiation list. Who am I talking about here? Is this Terrell Pryor, or is that...
Yep.
Is that the right name?
He's with the Browns now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm looking for pretty big things from him. Otherwise, he's on the first bus home. I mean, he's got to have good OTAs and good camp. He's really got, I mean, this is his, once you get to Cleveland.
yeah.
You know
you're
what I'm
on
saying?
Your last chance.
Yeah, the last stop is Tampa Bay. But
and the thing is, Terrell Pryor is going to Cleveland as a wide receiver, not as a quarterback.
Yep. He is. He's being given an opportunity as an emergency QB and a wide receiver / punt returner, kick returner.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's what he'll audition as. So
he's still going to make more money than if he was a quarterback in the CFL.
Yeah, and he could run some sort of wildcat sets for them, too. I mean, they got a pretty interested offensive coordinator. So
he was very highly touted coming out of university, though.
For sure.
He was a first-round pick, I believe, was he not?
He was, and he was on the Mel Kiper list, you know what I mean? Like the top draft picks list, and all the analysts had him on there.
He was
there.
A third round pick.
Do you know he holds a record in the NFL?
What's that?
Longest touchdown run by a quarterback in NFL history, 93 yards.
Wow. Cool.
That's right.
Tearing
so scrimmaging from the 7.
Wow. Run it in, boy.
Yeah.
And it was the longest
for
touchdown
the Rose
run
Bowl.
It was the longest touchdown run of any player in the history of the Oakland Raiders, beating a record set by Bo Jackson in 1989 by 1 yard.
Okay. Wow.
Did you guys hear what she said? We got 90 seconds left in this thing, and it's wrapping up at 10 o'clock.
I heard y'all talking about Terrell Pryor.
Yeah, we're talking about Terrell Pryor. I saw you got kicked out, and I brought you back in, Mike. Sorry.
Well, okay, what's going on with Terrell?
No, we're just talking about him.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So we got 60 seconds left in the show. Anything really quickly that you guys want to bring up or wrap up or say anything else? I'm sorry that we lost 38 minutes on the show from my incompetence, and I apologize. And we'll be back in on the show on Wednesday, and we will review the Toronto-Calgary game, and we will preview the upcoming week. So everything else is going to be wonderful. Thank you very much for joining us with Let's Talk CFL, Episode 9, Week 3 in review. We've had Kelly Bale, Charles Cliff, Mike Townsend, myself, Christopher Jones. And this show is a wrap. Thank you very much. Say goodnight, boys.
On to week four. Take care, folks.
All right, Ottawa. See y'all later.